Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I continue to plumb the depths of the archived guests that I have invited in the past and have been neglectful in revisiting. I am joined by Mr. John Syracusa. John, thank you for joining me again.
I'm so happy to be back. I was just waiting for your call. I was ready to watch any Star Trek that you recommended.
Well, I am pleasantly surprised that you are willing to watch Star Trek for this podcast, because I feel like, and this may not be true, that you're not a huge Star Trek fan.
I really like the recent movies, and I've seen an awful lot of the original series and Next Gen, and I've watched all of Discovery, so I'm increasingly Star Trek fluent.
It sounds like it. So what did you think of, I know you can be... I wouldn't say a harsh critic, but you can be demanding of your television viewing. So what did you think of Star Trek Discovery, the second season?
I think I liked it. It's hard for me to say I liked it better than the first. I like the mirror timeline. I didn't like the Klingons. I'm just in the mainstream. Nobody likes the Klingons, Klingons. Everyone liked the mirror thing. Mm-hmm. The second season with Spock, I was a little bit worried, but I felt like it settled in. If you could put together the best parts of the first and second season, it would be a hell of a thing. But it looks really good, and I enjoy sort of the actors and the characters. So, it's just a matter of them finding their groove, I feel like.
I think you're right, and I am hopeful for the third season, although who knows what the heck is going to happen now that
they're... Yeah, that's what I like about this show. They don't care. Whatever precedent was set in the first season, they already did, they did a heck of a thing at the end of the second season I don't want to ruin, but I like a show that is open to doing something completely different season to season.
And I admire the fact that they are working within the framework of Star Trek and being respectful to canon, but not being kind of shackled to it. So they are, they're exploring the boundaries in respectful ways. I think some Star Trek fans disagree, but that is my opinion, that they're being respectful.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with all the canon, but even I was getting most of the references. So they're really picking from the things that most people know about the original series. And I liked what the JJ movies did, where it's like, we need a way to be able to do new things, but we also need a way for you to understand that it's the Star Trek you know and love. And so anytime they can find some way to do that, I say go for it, because it's more difficult, as many Star Trek series have found out, to make an entirely disconnected, another thing that happens in the Star Trek universe, and it really has nothing to do with any of the original characters or timelines. It's tough to do that.
Let's talk about the episode that we watched. What a clever concept. Deja Q, which is a third season, a 13th episode from the Next Generation. I was going to say from the original series, but that is not right. And I'm going to say something, John. I don't know you. We have not discussed this before, so I do not know what your feelings are about this episode. I don't know what your feelings are about Q, but I'm just going to come out and say this may possibly be one of my favorite episodes of the Next Generation, because I'm a big fan of Q, and I find this episode to be quite amusing. So I'm flipping the script here and just saying I like this episode a whole lot.
Yeah, Next Gen is interesting. We're talking about something that's going to do shows that are going to do something entirely new from season to season, whereas Next Gen was definitely in the old model, where it's like it is going to be a known quantity, and there will be arcs and interesting stories and development across the season. But basically, every episode was going to be an adventure with people without too much boat rocking. Things aren't going to be suddenly turned on their head at the end of every season. And, there's every show wants to be so dramatic or just have like a complete through line. And like this style of show of just doing Monster of the Week or Episode of the Week seems passe now, but there's a certain comfort to it. And coming back to the show, I saw lots of Next Gen when it was on TV. I don't think I've seen all of them, but I've seen almost all of them, because they ran all the time and they reran. Seeing all these people again, seeing the lighting, the sets, the outfits, I'm reminded that this was, in my mind, I picture it as looking worse than it actually does. I'm like, this looks pretty good. Did they do an HD remaster of this or something? Everybody's so young, right? No lines are on their faces. And I love the outfits. These uniforms are great. And this is like season 3, where Riker's got the beard, and like everything is right with the world, and this is sort of right in the heart of Next Gen. So yeah, I like the episode too, and I just like revisiting Next Gen because I can't recall the last time I actually sat down and watched an episode from beginning to end.
You bring up something that I was thinking about and I wanted to talk to you about, which is kind of the episodic nature of this TNG, and thinking about how, I mean, you basically already said this, but do you miss these kinds of shows where you can just kind of pop in at any point? You can, you know, like, you don't need to know anything really about the Next Generation to watch this episode. You might get a little bit more out of it if you know who Q is, but really they kind of tell you, you can get the gist of it very easily that Q is this annoying character that pops up and has lost his powers. But I don't know. I find, well, A, it's Next Generation is kind of comfort food for me anyway, but I kind of miss the fact that I don't need to, like, you know, for the Game of Thrones, I don't have to try to remember what happened four seasons ago, or we're watching The Expanse. Like, you can't watch The Expanse out of order. That would not be good.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because in these, I definitely like the modern style of TV show. And in most of my youth, when I was watching the other style of TV show, it was very episodic. And I think this is true of Next Gen too. I loved that within sort of the, you know, very self-contained episodes, there were little bits of continuity sprinkled, and you were paid off from having watched season one and season two and three, all those individual episodes. And this episode alone, like, is full of references to earlier seasons or things you know about those characters from past episodes. And it was always like, you'd be watching an episode and yeah, this is a fun episode, or it's a dumb episode, or whatever. They're having an adventure. There's a problem. They're going to solve it by the end of the thing. And then the next episode, you know, everything will reset. But I delight in getting those little tidbits, the through line, because it wasn't a show built like Game of Thrones or Lost or whatever on an entire big through line. Like, that's not how they built shows back then. So every little piece of that you got made the show feel more special. And it's kind of like, you know, the withholding of that. And instead of like embracing it fully to say it's episodic, but there is a through line, and because we hold it back from you, every piece that you get of it is precious and clever, and, you know, a wink and a nod and an unexpected laugh when the show that you expected to just be like, I have no memory of what came before or after, suddenly makes a reference from two seasons ago.
Yes, and it makes you feel like your work has paid off. You've done the homework, and now you get to know this secret thing that only a few other people know, or probably a lot of people, because it was a fairly popular show. But
yeah, and they do, like, they don't do much of it in this episode, but they do evolve the character. I'm reminded of Data's series long arc, which has a few, you know, data points in this episode, right? Mm-hmm. Like that went through the series and into the movies and all. Like, there is an arc, but most of the time he's just being Data, you know. Same thing with Q, same thing, you know. Like, it's I do enjoy that, like, sort of an arc that is stretched out until all you have is big empty spaces, then little dots and little dots. But in between, the characters just get to be the characters, and they just get to be an ensemble cast and bounce off each other, and, you know, chemistry works. It works.
Yeah, Marisa once described watching, because I asked her, well, why do you like to watch Star Trek with me? She enjoys Star Trek, but I was just, she's like, oh, it's, you know, it's, I feel like I get to visit my friends and see what they're up to, because the characters, you get to know the characters so well, even though they aren't radically different from the beginning to the end of the seven seasons. You just feel like, you know, Captain Picard, you want to see what he's doing. You want to see what Riker's beard is up to.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, the same thing with, like, the mysteries, like Guinan, like, her, what's her deal, right? They don't tell you her deal immediately or throw it in your face, but they hint at what her deal is over the course of many seasons. And so some episodes she's not in at all. She's not even a major character, right? But there are, like, mysteries on the ship. You're like, I wonder if this episode will get one more piece of information about this person's backstory or this relationship or whatever. I enjoy that.
Yes, and you always say, I wonder if Mott the Enterprise Barber will show up in this episode. He shows up a couple times. He's not a main character, though. And this I like this episode a lot because it, on the surface, is a pretty silly episode. I enjoy Q. I know there are some people who hate Q, and I'm going to ask you about your thoughts on Q in a moment. But it also, as you alluded to, does a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but it ponders some weighty subjects about what it means to be human. And I think there are some kind of touching interplay between Data and Q in here that you could overlook the gravity of, because it's kind of, you know, bracketed by Q being quippy in between. And it kind of ends on a very sweet note, I feel like. But let's talk about Q. Q is one of these characters. I feel like you either love Q or you hate Q, because he has no rules and he just kind of shows up and he's a trickster. Our friend Jason Snell, not a fan of Q. How about you, John? What are your thoughts on Q?
I always liked Q because when Q appeared in an episode, like, you know, it was going to be a Q episode, and it wasn't like every fifth episode or every second episode. It was fairly rare. And so when I got one of those, I knew it was going to be fun and funny and strange and anything could happen. And it would be terrible if there were too many of those episodes, but I felt like there was sort of just the right amount of them. I enjoyed the character, and I enjoyed the sort of the surrealism that he could bring to a show that's otherwise about, you know, spaceships and all sorts of like serious things with rules about technical mumbo jumbo. And Q comes in and like all bets are off. Anything could happen in this episode. And by the end of the episode, most likely he's gone and you won't see him again for a while. So that's the right amount of Q, and I enjoy Q.
And Q can reset everything, which is something these shows do anyway. But he just at the end, he's like, okay, everything's back to where it was. I'm out of here.
Yep.
See you later, humans. And I must say, Patrick Stewart can play exasperated like nobody else. He's got a very good exasperated face that he gets to use a lot on Q.
Yeah, he did the face palm in this one. Mm-hmm. And I know that the famous Picard face palm gif, but does he do that exact pose very, very frequently?
This, in fact, I believe this episode, it may be the source of that gif.
That's what I was thinking when I saw it. I'm like, is that the actual face palm, or is that just a thing that he does on set all the time?
I think he's done it a couple times, but I feel like this is the iconic face palm. This is a pop cultural milestone, this face palm. And this also, as I was watching this, I was quite amused because there is, I feel like the universe picked this episode for us to watch, John, because there is a robot or not interlude in this episode.
Oh, that's right. Yes. That's one of his trademark lines, though. Data's always telling people he's an android, not a robot, right?
It is true. And he is in fact not a robot. And I think wasn't there an episode of Robot or Not in which Data was discussed?
I believe so. We also discussed was it Kirstie Alley? I don't know. Whichever one from the motion picture was.
Oh, yes.
Not human.
She ostensibly was not a robot, I don't think. But anyway, let's talk about this episode. We've been talking around the edges of this. So the Enterprise is arrived at a planet. It doesn't really matter what the name of the planet is. All you need to know is their moon is falling out of the sky, and they seem mildly concerned.
Just like Majora's Mask.
Yes, that's right. My other question about this episode, I mean, I know I have many questions that the episodes don't care about, but I do wonder, is the Enterprise the only starship anywhere around here? Because I feel like there should be more. This seems like a major thing that people should be trying to help with.
Well, on the one hand, yeah, maybe they could help more. But on the other hand, there are a lot of planets, right?
That's true. So
you can't. Is all of Starfleet going to come at great expense to the makers of this television program to try to pull this one moon away? Like, maybe there are other moons that are being pulled away from other planets. Maybe people are very far away. Like, you know, we all know the actual reason. You know, like, you can't have, it's expensive to have more ships on screen than just the one that you have existing shots of. But I feel like space is so big and the Enterprise is often on its own.
That's true.
I was willing to go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. It occurs to me that this seems like something that perhaps a little more help would be than kind of like a half-hearted, half-interested Enterprise with a fearful civilization in the balance.
Yeah, Picard's like, we're going to try again, but, you know, it might not work, so.
Yeah, like evacuate everything.
You're ready to die down there. Yeah.
Good luck. Aliens we'll never see again. But, spoiler alert for people who are very upset that perhaps these aliens die, they're fine at the end. Everything's fine.
Well, their mouths don't move the whole time, so I feel kind of bad about that.
They do have an interesting design. I was wondering more about their society. What are they called? Braels, I guess? Braels? They are in Brael 4, so I'm assuming they're Braelian? I don't know. Someone's going to tell me how to pronounce that, please. But anyway, this is the dilemma the moon is going to crash into this planet. Everybody's trying to solve it with science. But suddenly there's a flash on the bridge, and who pops up hovering, I guess, kind of off the floor there. But Q, but sadly, or maybe not sadly, but he's naked. And it is clear this is not his normal entrance. He falls to the ground. And that is how the episode starts. And this is when we figure out, I don't remember if they say this at the before or after, but he comes clean and says, I've lost my powers. I've been kicked out of the Q continuum. And everybody on the bridge, I think rightfully, just assumes that he is once again jerking them around, and he is the reason this moon is falling into the planet. And now he's just here to, you know, wreak havoc on the Enterprise.
So I'm pretty sure I've seen this episode before. But the only time I was sure of that is at the end when Data gets his little gift. I'm like, oh, I totally have seen this episode. But prior to that, and because I'm super old and I haven't seen it in a long time, I couldn't remember whether Q was faking, which worked well. Because if you had been watching TNG for up until season 3, episode 13, you know, like Picard, don't trust Q. Like, he says all sorts of things. He lies all the time, right? He plays games all the time. So nobody believes him. And honestly, I didn't believe him for the vast majority of the episode. I'm like, he's, you know, don't believe Q when he tells you he's lost his powers. Of course he hasn't lost his powers. It turns out that in this episode, he actually did lose his powers. But I didn't believe him all the way up until, like, the, you know, we were forced to face, basically until the other Q showed up and sort of confirmed it when he's speaking off camera with no one watching him. Because up till that point, it's like, this is totally an act that he would put on, you know, or some experiment that he would pull, it's or true. He's toying with them or whatever. So I think the character of Q, despite me not remembering this episode, has been well established. And it, unlike many other TV shows, where you're like, you can immediately tell what the truth. In the same way we could tell that they were going to save the aliens, because it's, you know, Star Trek, and they always save them in the end for the most part. This was not predictable to me. I couldn't tell whether he was lying or not.
Yeah, and it makes me think, this episode makes me think that Q, I always look at Q as kind of this comedic figure, but he is really, if you think about it, also kind of tragic, because he is here on the bridge. He is, well, before this happens, he's omniscient, and, you know, he can do whatever he wants. He's all powerful, all knowing, but he doesn't have any friends. You even get the sense that the rest of the Q continuum doesn't really like him. And so he spends his time trying to figure out, well, A, torturing alien civilizations, but B, trying to get Captain Picard to be his friend. And Captain Picard has no interest in being his friend. And he even says it in this episode, like, Captain Picard is like, why did you come here? And Q says, because you're the closest thing I have to a friend in this universe, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, that's Q's soft spot for humans in general, and these humans in particular, is well established across all the other Q episodes, because if he didn't have that soft spot, they would all be dead 20 times over. Like, in the true. End, he always like, well, I guess, okay, right? So it's clear that it's just well established that he's looking out for them at the same time that he's toying with them and being frustrated by them and sparring with them. I mean, that obviously works for the show, because if you kill off all the characters, the show is over, and Q could totally do that, but he doesn't. So, it's a nice, he's kind of part of the family in an annoying way, as evidenced by the way the crew treats him during this thing. Like,
yes,
they don't really like him, but it's not like they have him, you know, at the end of a phaser the whole episode. Like, they just casually walk him down to the little jail cell. They put him in. They let him out. They let him onto the bridge. They talk to him about science stuff. Like, he's annoying.
He's fine.
But, like, I honestly think it's the resignation of knowing, like, what are we going to do? Like, if he has his powers, there's nothing we can do. And if he doesn't have his powers, then he's basically harmless. I mean, he hurts his back looking over at a console. Like, he's not, if that's actually the truth, he's not much of a threat.
Yeah, he's not the most competent human that exists, but very smart still. And I do enjoy so he does go visit other series. So he shows up in Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and his interactions with Janeway and Sisko are quite different than his interactions with Picard, and they are quite enjoyable. So check those out. If you're a Q fan and for some reason you haven't seen those Voyager and Deep Space Nine episodes, you should watch them. But yes, as you say, John, everyone's like, I don't know if you're really human. They scan him and he turns up human. Counselor Troy says, oh, I feel some emotion that I would normally describe as terrified. And Q is doesn't enjoy that. He also, there are a lot of good Q liners, one-liners in there. He asks Worf if he's eaten any good books lately. That's always a good line. And then they decide, okay, we're sending you to the brig. They stroll down to the brig and leave him in there. And this is, I have a question. About the person who mans the brig, because he's sitting there looking at a monitor.
Looking away from the prisoners.
Yes, looking away from the prisoner. And then another thing I liked about this episode is that there are a lot of aliens out there that don't like Q very much for many good reasons. And so one of them shows up and scans the Enterprise and figures out he's in there. And they send this little like floating probe thing into the brig to check out Q, I guess, while he's sleeping. And there's a scene. It is clear that the guy who is sitting at the console there sees it, but he doesn't tell anybody.
He's a mute. I don't know. Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, I kept waiting to see if that actor was going to have a line. It never happened. He nods to Picard when he comes in. Mm-hmm. He looks. He's got the sort of disposable Star Trek person haircut, mm-hmm. right? And he's facing the console that we can't see. It's just, he's basically set dressing, but it's not clear how that entire jail thing works. I mean, there's only one cell in there too, because every time they issue voice commands, there's no ambiguity about what cell they mean.
That's well, maybe there's a proximity sensor as well, so the computer knows, oh, you're looking and standing vaguely towards this cell, so I'll just take this one down. And that was it. My other question, I thought, well, maybe when I first saw him sitting there, I was like, oh, maybe he raises and lowers the shields, but
no.
He doesn't. It's voice activated. He has no purpose whatsoever.
Yeah, in this particular episode, so Q's in the cell, and I'm thinking about, they're doing all the gags about what it means to be human, and I look in the cell, and I look at him, and I think, I guess this is the 90s, so they didn't do this, but at a certain point, they have to make the joke about going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And there are no facilities inside his cell. So maybe that guy lets him out and walks him to the bathroom every once in a while. But they never went there. They never got to, they got to eating and they never got to pooping.
Mm-mm. Well, you
eating
know,
and sleeping.
TNG, they don't poop. That is the great mystery of the Enterprise. Where are the bathrooms and what do they look like?
Well, I can imagine not seeing them, the same reason you don't see them in most things, unless something exciting happens in the bathroom. But when you're in a cell, and the part of your story in the episode is what it's like to be human, and you discover sleep and hunger. Like, I mean, maybe if you'd eaten those 10 Sundays, maybe then we would have got some.
Yes. He does not. I did enjoy when he's trying to figure out, he hurts his back when, so basically they let him out because it would be a boring episode if they just kept him in the brig. And Captain Picard says, listen, Q, I don't know if you caused this or not. We're going to assume that you, that we should still work on this, and this isn't some kind of weird test, and we're going to use you as a resource, and Data is going to babysit you, because even without your powers, you can probably mess some stuff up. So Data will walk around with you, and you should go help Geordi figure out how we're going to change the not let this moon crush this planet, or ram into this planet. It's not going to crush the planet. It'll be fine. And so there are lots of good scenes with Data. Basically, one of my favorite scenes with Data and Q is like, ugh, I'm immortal. It's great. It's awful. I hate it. And then he looks at Data and he says, well, what are you thinking, Data? And Data says, well, it's interesting. The thing that I long for and is my life's ambition, which is to become human, you have been given as a punishment. And I thought that was a very powerful statement.
Well, I feel a little bit disappointed in Data's logic circuits here, because it's the oppositional example he gives seems, it makes sense on the surface, but if you think about it, Data's option is not between inhuman and immortal and human and mortal. He's mortal and not human. So he's got the worst of all possible worlds. So him that's upgrading true. To human because he thinks that's something that he would aspire to, he's mortal either way. And if that's a thing that he wants, it would be an upgrade. You know what I'm saying? But it's almost like maybe the analogy would be if Q had stayed immortal but had human emotions. I don't know. Anyway, they're not perfect opposites, but it's this episode has important steps along the way of Data's journey towards considering humanity and what it means to be human. That's his whole role in the episode, and mm-hmm. whether he would actually enjoy that. And is this pre or post emotion chip? I don't know the
this
timeline.
This is pre emotion chip.
All right. Yeah. So, but I enjoy Data because he's always poking at the corners of himself, and he kind of fills that role. You know, it reminds me of, do you know that the comic that's going around the web these days with the little aliens?
Oh, they go, oh no.
No, not the oh no one.
Oh no.
That's a different one. It's a four panel comic, and it shows typical space aliens with big eyes, and they give literal descriptions of things in the real world. And Data did that for all of TNG. He was always in situations and opining with factual statements about what's going on with a different perspective. And then sometimes going back to his quarters and puzzling over it and deciding at the end of the episode that he has some new insight into humanity or that he is confused by it or whatever. Data is a good character.
Data is a good character. And he is very good in this episode because he's basically like shepherding Q through his being a human, even though Data is not a human, but he has spent a long time studying up human traits so he can help Q understand when he's hungry, when he's tired. Well, he wasn't there when Q fell asleep. That was funny when Q was describing to Captain Picard the terrifying experience of falling asleep.
You get used to it, he said.
Yeah, Captain Picard, once again, not having any fun here and just being like, oh, Q, you really committed
to this
bit.
He's worried about the moon. Like, he's got the moon to deal with. He's got these things. He's got Q. He's got the big alien cloud coming for Q. It's just one hassle after another.
It's true. It's not easy being Captain Picard.
Yeah.
He's got to walk around and point at things. That's what he does. But Q and Data are basically palling around. They hang out with Geordi for a little while and try to figure out how to, you know, change to get rid of this moon, not get rid of this moon, but solve the problem. And one of my favorite things, probably one of the things that I quote very often from Star Trek that I don't know if anyone I'm quoting it to knows what I'm getting quoting it from, is when Geordi's like, well, how would you fix this Q, because Q has rejected many of Geordi's ideas, and he says, well, just change the gravitational constant of the universe. And Geordi is like, well, how do you do that? And Q very exasperatedly says, you just do it. So it's that kind of thing that I love that line, and I love the fact that Q, even though he can't do it, is just like, well, you just do it. I can't explain how you do these things. You just do them.
And I feel like Q would have been more helpful if he wasn't so exasperated at the indignity of being human and having to follow orders. And he's just complaining the whole time. And like the one tiny bit of insight he can offer is like, here's how I would solve it. I don't know. Don't bother me. My back hurts. You got this person telling me what to do. This is all miserable and I'm sad.
That's right. I don't even get a uniform.
He wasn't particularly helpful. As always, Geordi figures it out more or less on its own. Like the tools were all there. He just needed a nudge in the right direction. But mm-hmm. Q, for all his, you know, million times smarter intellect or whatever he claims it is, wasn't really that big of a help.
No, he kind of was the seed of the idea, but he didn't do much more than that. Although he's very good at complaining about everything that is happening otherwise. And so what? Yeah, and then they leave engineering and they go to 10 forward because Q is hungry. After Dr. Crusher comes with her quick scene trying to fix his back, and she seems to enjoy causing him a little pain, but solving his issue as well, because she does have medical ethics. And she tells him he's probably hungry, so he goes to 10 forward with Data, and there's a cute scene where he asks Data what he should eat, and Data's like, well, I enjoy like some kind of weird protein shake, but I don't recommend it for you. And then he orders 10 chocolate sundaes, which is a lot of chocolate sundaes.
This is one of the first sort of stereotypical things that probably wouldn't fly today. It's like, I have observed that the one female character that is regular on the show often likes chocolate when she's upset, because that is stereotypical. And it's like, all right. Is this before or after the lovely ladies are spirited into existence?
I think this is before the lovely ladies appear. Yes. Yeah. We'll get to that scene. And he doesn't eat the sundaes, though. That's the worst thing. It's kind of a gag, right? The sundaes come and he's like, oh, I've lost my
appetite. He gets his hand stabbed.
Well, that would ruin your, and that's the whole point. They want to get him to 10 forward so that he can meet Guinan, and Guinan is not buying his act, and she decides that she's going to test it herself and see what happens if, you know, she stabs him with a fork, a future space fork.
Yeah, there's definitely bad blood going on there. So she has her one scene and she walks out. I also noticed they managed to squeeze in 3 chests in the background of the 10 forward scene.
Well, what else are you gonna do with 10 forward?
I mean, they've got the chest set there. They're gonna put it in the background at some point.
You're gonna use it. And when he's in 10 forward, he is also attacked once again by these swirling aliens, and Data saves him from like the weird glowing field that they try to nab him with.
That's another interesting aspect of Data. I think you see this in a lot of movies with actual robots or droids and things, where there is some kind of synthetic character that has a mission, and we the audience are to understand that, like, because it is part machine or wholly machine, that it will just do whatever you told it to do. So in this case, Data was told to keep an eye on Q, and, you know, like, it has this vague directive to handle Q. So when Q gets attacked by the glowy lights, Data goes and tries to save him, which, and this happens later as well, mm-hmm. which can read as heroic, but also he's just doing what he was asked to do. So when we see a machine just, or like, you know, or a pet, or like any other thing of like lesser intelligence, or, you know, in the case of a simple machine, maybe no intelligence, pigheadedly doing what it's been told to do, if what it has been told to do is something that could be construed as heroic, we read heroism into the otherwise just, you know, like, I was told to deal with Q, and Q was being injured or escaping or getting pulled away, therefore I go get it. But in the end, Q is a good friend. Not Q. Data is a good friend to Q, right? But not because he's supposed to be a friend, just because he was given an order. It's very ambiguous, but it's very easy for us, the audience, to map heroism onto Data.
I feel like, but Data is sentient, so he chooses whether or not he is going to save Q, and I think he does. And I think that reads to the fact that, so Q, this whole episode is building up to the fact that Q realizes, oh, if I stay on the Enterprise, these aliens are going to destroy it until they get to me, and so I must sacrifice myself, even though as he's doing it, he is telling everybody that's not what he's doing, but it is clear that's what he's doing. So he takes a shuttlecraft and goes off to meet the aliens. And as he's doing that, everybody on the Enterprise, even though they really don't like Q, they can't just let him kill himself, basically.
Because this is TNG.
Exactly. So
the future where people are nice and do the right thing.
That's right. So Captain Picard and Riker are yelling all kinds of stuff, trying to get Q back. And
well, like, I remember Picard resignedly says, "Transport, beam the shuttle back, I guess." And then tried to justify this. It's a perfectly good shuttle, right? And that doesn't work. But, like, I mean, they're not enthusiastic about doing the right thing, but they know they have to do it.
Exactly. And that's what I think Data is enthusiastic in doing it, and I think he chooses to do it. So I feel like it is, in fact, heroism.
Yeah, I mean, I think Data's character has established it's not that he always follows orders, because there are episodes where he decides to do a different thing because he has pondered and decided that, you know, despite orders to the contrary or whatever, that he should do this other thing. Sometimes those decisions are good, sometimes they're bad. Again, it also depends on whether there's an emotion chip involved. I think it is established enough that he has some autonomy and is not always just going to blindly follow orders. But he sacrifices himself and his body in this case in ways that would have killed a human to fulfill his duties as assigned.
That's right. And I do enjoy the fact that, so they have him in, I guess they have them in sick bay or maybe in engineering. I don't know. I don't remember. And they're trying to fix him up. And Dr. Crusher says, oh, if he were mortal, he would have died. And Q was in the same thing. And Q was like, I'm mortal and I'm fine. So let's not overstate this.
Not particularly empathetic.
No, he is not. He is a little self-absorbed, I think, if I had to judge Q critically. I would write that down. My 360 feedback on Q would be perhaps a little self-absorbed.
Let's not bring the workplace into this program.
Well, speaking of the workplace, so Q goes onto the shuttle, and who does he meet on the shuttle but a young Corbin Burnson from L.A. Law.
I was staring at him so hard. I'm like, is that Corbin Burnson? Is it just someone who looks just like him and sounds like his? Again, everybody is so young in this show. I look at them, I'm like, oh my God, were these people ever this young?
Yes, they were. They have the tape to prove it. So while the Enterprise is fiendishly trying to save Q, like, nothing is working, Riker, I think, yells out, what the hell is going on? Because their transporters aren't working, the engines aren't working, and it's all because Q, not Q, but Q, Q2, we shall call him, because that's what they refer to him as in canon, Corbin Burnson, has thwarted their efforts and has also put the other aliens on pause because Q is almost, he's on the cusp of doing a selfless act. And he was kicked out of the Q Continuum because he was basically a jerk, although everybody in the Q Continuum is a jerk. Q is, I guess, a mega jerk. I don't know how, what the gradients of jerk are in the Q Continuum. And we find out, I enjoy the scenes with the two Qs. I think Corbin Burnson makes a charming Q. And I like the fact that when he looks at his hands, he kind of is a little disgusted as he realizes the vessel that he is in at the moment. So I enjoyed that. And he basically says, you know, Q, I had you kicked out, but now if you sacrifice yourself, I'm going to have to deal with, you know, basically paperwork and people annoying me for like hundreds of years. So you could just have your powers back.
So my question about the other Q is, why does he have the same ugly outfit as Q Prime? Like, Q had to get that outfit because he came naked and they just gave him what they had. And they're not going to give him a Starfleet uniform, despite the fact that he asked for one a couple times. So he gets this terrible jumpsuit. When the other Q appears, why does he have the same ugly outfit?
And he remarks on how ugly it is.
Yeah, like you could be look like anything you want. You've got your powers.
Well, I think that I read that as this Q. So Q Prime has been fascinated with humans and has been studying humans. I get the feeling that the rest of the Q Continuum is not as enamored with humans. And perhaps, I mean, they know everything about humans, but they don't care about humans. So he just was like, okay, I guess I need to be a human to interact with Q. And I'll just, you know, he's lazy, so he just will wear what Q is wearing. And there you go. That's how I read that. But
yeah, I mean, I suppose he was just mirroring him, but that outfit really is ugly. And not flattering, really.
No, that's not nobody should be wearing that outfit, I think. That's right. So Q gets his powers back. I did enjoy the fact that I feel like in a modern show, getting your powers back would be very dramatic. Things would happen, but basically all that happens is Corbin Burnson says, you have your powers back, and then he leaves, and Q then starts using his powers.
They spent a lot of budget on those glowy light effects.
That's true. I appreciated that. And of course, the first thing he does is, you know, put the aliens that are trying to kill him in the palm of his hand, and he's basically threatens them. And then Corbin Burnson's face comes up and it's like, remember, you have to be mildly nicer.
Yeah, so using it's all fun and games when it's just a bunch of glowy lights that we can all laugh at it. It would have been slightly less funny if it was a planet of puppies that he was doing.
It is true. But then he doesn't kill them. He just, well, he may kill them, actually. I don't know. He blows them into nothingness, so who knows what he does to them. But the episode ends on a high note, not on genocide, because Q is happy to have his powers back and he wants to celebrate. So he goes to the place where everyone knows his name, the bridge of the Enterprise, and he brings a mariachi band with him. And he, is in the mood to celebrate. There's music. He summons, the lovely ladies, to gift Riker.
He passes them around because they're just an object to be bestowed. And, you know, like he's done the mariachi thing before, right? This is not his first mariachi band.
I think he enjoys a mariachi band.
It's a little cultural appropriation when he's dressed that way, but whatever.
It's true. It was a different time.
It definitely was. And in general, like, that's the thing about this show. Like, the TNG universe is, like, the most optimistic Star Trek universe, where all the people are basically good and decent and smart and aren't ruled by their emotions, and the world they inhabit is all futuristic and great and everything. Like, but it's a show made a long time ago, and so stuff like that sneaks through, and sort of like the voice of the authors of, like, this is a good gag, right? Scantily clad women being passed around as a prize, that's good, right?
Not so great. Well, Riker, to his credit, was not interested, and it leads to another good line that Q says, you weren't like this before the beard, which I enjoyed.
Is this pre or post trombone?
I think the trombone has been used, so this might be post trombone. And then Worf, the ladies transfer to Worf. Worf is not refusing them. But the less time we spend on the ladies, it's fine. Captain Picard doesn't want the music anymore. And Q is like, fine. And he says, I want to first, before I leave, I want to bestow a gift upon my compatriot Data, who has helped me through this harrowing adventure. And you're not sure. Data, of course, the first thing he says is, if you want to turn me into a human, don't do that.
He said it will end the series.
That's right. And Q's reaction, I thought, was very good. He's like, I wanted this to be a reward, basically. I wouldn't punish you by turning you into a human. But he makes Data laugh, which I feel like is a touching moment in this episode as well. And also a famous Star Trek customizable card game card is Data laughing. So that's a deep cut for my Star Trek CCG fans out there.
Yes, he is racked by laughter, and just when you think it's over, it comes again. And then when it actually ends, he's like, that was a hell of a thing.
And everybody's like, what's so fun? The other thing I thought was strange was the reaction of everyone on the bridge. It was clear that Q made him laugh, so there was nothing particularly funny. He just made Data laugh. And Geordi's like, what's so funny, Data? And you're like, come on, Geordi, get with the program.
Well, I would think it's an interesting question to say, like, does he have a recollection of finding something funny?
Oh,
like, because he enjoyed the laughter. So in the moment, he felt this the way you would feel if you were laughing at something funny. And it's like he can recapture that. It's like, nope, it was fleeting. It's gone.
It's gone. And I did like the fact that the rest of the characters on the bridge also start to laugh because Data is
contagious.
Exactly. And then the laughter is over. Captain Picard gets the message from the planet. So we think that Q leaves. He's leaving his parting gift. They still have this moon that's going to crash into this planet that they need to deal with that everyone seems to have forgotten about. But luckily, Q also fixes that. They don't actually say that, but it is very clear that Q has fixed the problem.
Because yeah, and he wouldn't. It's beneath him to admit to Picard that he's going to fix their problem. So he makes it seem like he's going to leave with just this parting gift of Data laughing, but actually he's going to fix the moon thing because he does care about humans and he does want to help out Picard and like, but he doesn't want to say that to their face.
So exactly. He's not going to admit
Q exit.
Exactly. Like when he wouldn't admit that he was going to sacrifice himself until it became clear that if he did, he would get his powers back. So he admitted that he was going to do it. Yep. So the moon is fine. Everybody on the planet is happy. Captain Picard is like, well, that's over. Maybe Q learned something, an important lesson from this episode. And I think that this may be my least favorite part of this, because I feel like it would have been better if Q had not reappeared in the smoke of a cigar to tell Captain Picard that perhaps not, he did not really learn anything from this. That might have been, for me, one half step too far, but
I like the cigar appearing, because he's trying to do his signature engage move and Q just wants to thumb his nose at him one more time, because we're coming off of it of like saying Q is an old softy, he saved the planet, and it's like, no, Q's still a little bit of a scamp, and puts a cigar on the thing in the smoke. Yeah, maybe that's a bridge too far, but I like the cigar.
I get on board with that. I did like the cigar. I just thought we probably didn't need to see his head appear in the smoke.
Yeah, but we did have to. I think it was important to establish for any future Q episodes that Q be Q. You know, Q's still doing Q.
That's right. Q has not changed. He is still all powerful and mischievous as ever. And that is Deja Q. So I think that I am pleasantly surprised that we both enjoy this episode. I was a little afraid because I knew when this was picked that this is one of my favorite episodes of TNG. And I was worried that perhaps you would not enjoy it and then we'd have a very different conversation.
Yeah, it's in the fat part of the curve. Like, how many seasons of TNG are there?
7.
Yeah, so this is right smack in the middle. Like, it's not the early episodes where things are weird and they haven't figured out which characters are annoying and they haven't really settled in. And it's not towards the end where you start getting overwhelmed by big important things have to happen and all sorts of stuff like that, right? This is just, you know, all the characters are there. They look the way you expect them to look. The show looks good. You don't have to, they can bounce off each other based on your established understanding of them, and you can just do good episodes. I don't know if season 3 is considered a good season or not, but I feel like this episode showed a show that knew exactly what it was.
Season 3 has some very good episodes in it. So I think that overall, and of course it ends with the best of both worlds, which is one of the high watermarks of TNG. So there's lots of good stuff in season 3. And I am glad that I got to discuss one of my favorite episodes of TNG with you, John. Thank you for taking time out to talk to me about it.
Well, I'm glad I didn't have an episode of Enterprise.
Ooh, speaking of which, you do get to see the bathrooms in Enterprise. So,
is that where they get rid of the contamination gel?
No, that's a different. They have a chamber that is
just for that.